Today's program was brought to you by EscapeMaker.com. Visit a farm, escape through the net. Visit EscapeMaker.com for more.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, and welcome to A Few Things with Claire and Erica, where we introduce you to all of our new favorite discoveries, some old favorite discoveries, all inspired by our, definitely what is our favorite newsletter called 10 Things.
It just happens to be the one we write.
Exactly. Just so happens. You can sign up for that newsletter at ofakind.com, where you can also discover the stories and the products of all of our favorite emerging designers.
I'm Erica.
And I'm Claire. We're your hosts for this podcast. Today we are, as per usual, not always, but per usual, we have an amazing guest, Ruthie Barron, but we're going to save her for last so that you have to listen to us talk to each other first.
Perfect. I think everybody's excited about it.
So first we're going to talk about something that I was really excited to see in reading this week's New York Magazine, that summer seasonal anxiety disorder seasonal affective disorder showed up on the culture, or no, the approval matrix, it's called.
Yes.
And Erica knew that this was such a sensitive issue for me that she Snapchatted it to me, because I don't know if you know how savvy we are at social media, but we sometimes communicate with each other over Snapchat.
And then you have to screenshot things, and it's a really effective and efficient way to communicate with people, for sure.
It's the most official way to communicate things. But this was a moment for us. It was like 8 in the morning, and it was hilarious because we were both apparently reading our New York Magazine with our coffee, and Erica Snapchatted me that this was showing up on the New York Magazine approval matrix. I have always felt like most people get depressed in the winter and I get depressed in the summer, and have felt like, what is wrong with me?
Well, and it turns out basically that 5% of the general population experiences seasonal affective disorder, SAD, which is such a depressing acronym, but
depressing,
fine.
But yeah. Appropriate.
Yep. Yeah. And then 1% of all people feel it in the summer.
Yes. And for me, it's always like the minute it starts to get hot out, I get in sort of a funk. And I think it's gotten better over the years. I've learned how to manage it. But it's sort of a combination of a couple of things. One, I just hate feeling overly heated, and I hate the humidity, and I would way rather be too cold than too hot. It makes it hard for me to sleep, which obviously affects my mood. It throws off routine, which for me, I've always loved routine. Like, I like that structure. And when everybody disappears for the summer and goes on their vacations or does whatever, just sort of throws things out of whack, I'm like, oh, what's happening? Well, I need predictability.
And we were talking the other day about how when it's nice outside, you just feel like you should be, when you can be away from your desk or when you can be out of your house, you should be. And you feel this weird sort of FOMO-y pressure that if you're sitting on your couch watching TV, you're doing something wrong, or if you're, you know, not sitting out on your,
or if you're just like on your computer, like, yeah, it's hard. Like, one thing that I enjoyed during most like cool weather months is if I have a night where I don't have any other obligations, I actually really like staying at work late and getting caught up on email or whatever.
Right.
It's harder to do it in the summer because you have this sense that you're supposed to be outside doing things, enjoying the weather. And it is that sort of FOMO-y thing you said. It reminds me, a friend of ours, Danielle, who is a New York transplant who moved to LA, was like, I love it when it rains in LA because I can finally watch TV, because I feel guilty watching TV any other time. And I was like, totally.
When it's 72 and sunny, what are you doing?
Exactly. She's an entertainment editor, and she's like, yeah, I have to watch TV, but I feel crazy doing it when it's so perfect outside.
Well, so there's a good article in The Atlantic called When Summer is Depressing. And one of the things it talks about is how the symptoms of what they call reverse seasonal affective disorder are different than the ones that you experience in the winter. So apparently if you experience winter SAD, you want to sleep more, and you can always fall asleep. You eat more, you sort of do the comfort food thing.
Okay.
But the opposite kind of happens if you experience summer SAD. So you have insomnia, which you know.
I'm so tired today. I've been talking about it all day.
Have a bad appetite, apparently.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if that ever happens to me. I'm constantly voracious, but I can vouch for the insomnia. The other thing that you told me that they mentioned in this article, which is 100% true, is that The problem with feeling bummed out or depressed or anxious in the summer is that you're pretty sure that everybody else is so psyched just because it's summer that you feel even worse because you're like, I'm not supposed to be depressed in the summer. I'm supposed to be happy right now, which I started to understand this sort of phenomenon in a much bigger way when I read this book, which I mentioned a couple weeks ago. It's called The Mindful Way Through Depression.
Yes.
And it's by Jon Kabat-Zinn. And one of the major points that it makes is that most people who feel depressed make it worse because they're like, I shouldn't feel this way.
Right.
And
they don't just allow it to happen.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that is a huge tie-in with this sort of summer seasonal affective disorder, because you do have the sense of like everybody else is out jumping in pools and eating at barbecues and enjoying themselves and I'm all mopey. And a big point in Mindful Way Through Depression is you shouldn't judge your feelings. There's no way you should feel or shouldn't feel. You just feel that way and you should let yourself feel that way. And I will recommend this book over and over again, especially to anybody who might be feeling the effects of summer seasonal affective disorder.
So speaking of summer and happiness, weddings.
let's switch to the other side of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Weddings.
Celebrating other people and getting excited about all of that and doing so with gifts sometimes.
I have like 6 or 7 weddings to go to.
I have a light summer. I have just 2.
My husband and my friends are all like in the spirit and they're all deciding to commit to each other.
2015 is it for them?
2015 is the year to get married. So I am really bad at buying gifts on registries. So for 2 reasons. One, I always have that sense where I want to be really thoughtful. I want them to feel like I gave them something that made me think of them or whatever.
They felt more personal maybe.
Yes. And on a less emotional note, I always wait until the last minute and then the registries have all been bought out and I'm like, oh shoot.
And you're left with spatulas.
You're left with a spatula, yeah. And like one fork. Like, right. You can't get them the whole set. So I'm always trying to think of better wedding gifts basically. And you and I recently were talking about all of the best wedding gifts.
Yes. Yes. So one of the reasons we were talking about it recently is that we ran an interview on our site for an ongoing column called The Insider with Helen Rosner, who is the features editor at Eater. And she recommended one of the most amazing wedding gifts I've ever heard of, which is gifting a couple an after-hours tour of the MoMA and then doing a bottle of champagne at the Modern.
So good. A private after-hours tour.
Which it turns out is only $75 a person. So in the scheme of wedding gifts and special experiences,
it's a high-end wedding gift, but it's one that you might spend on somebody you're close to.
Exactly. And it's the sort of thing that people would just be floored by if
How
they got.
How romantic is that? I mean, I always talk about what is it that the Mixed Up Files of Basil E. Frankweiler, where they spend the night in the museum, but this is, which like you're never
it's
really going to get.
Kind of a tie into our next topic.
But this is amazing to be in a museum by yourself when it's closed and have a private tour. That is sick.
It's pretty magical.
Yeah.
And in terms of other experiences, a gift certificate to a crazy over the top meal or to a hotel.
Your parents did this for you, which I thought was so awesome. Your parents gave you a gift certificate to La Bernardin,
which
you're never going to go to otherwise. Like, I don't care how freaking rich we get, like duct tail style swimming in gold, you were never going to take yourself to
La Bernardin. and it felt like the perfect thing. I eat a lot of seafood, and so that felt like the perfect sort of a spot to go.
I just loved that.
Yeah, and we both have done the sort of staycation thing, the one night at a hotel in the city where you live, and I think that makes such a super special gift that people can do.
It's so good because again, nobody's ever going to do it for themselves, but if they have this gift certificate for a hotel in your hometown, it's just nice sometimes to get away from your real life and your belongings without having to travel. And I think that's such a good gift.
Yeah. In things that you've gotten me, which was not for a wedding.
What did I get you?
The Kingston Wine Company subscription.
Oh, yeah, that was good. What, it was a Christmas present?
That was a Christmas present.
They are so great.
It's this little upstate winery that puts together a couple of bottles every month based on the preferences of the people that you're gifting and sends a description and tells you what you're getting.
And they send you a recipe, too,
and
right?
And a recipe to pair with it. Yeah. It doesn't feel like a cheesy wine club, because I think a lot of those things can.
It's upstate. It's a lot of, like, independent... I don't know if it's an indie wine store. Is that a thing? But it sure feels like it. And they are super personal. And I didn't even know that they would personalize it, but I emailed them and I was like, Erica never drinks red wine. Is that cool if you would maybe just send her like whites and sparkling wines? And they were like, of course, why not? And they were super great about it. And they write little notes and they're wonderful.
Yes. And related to that, Mouth.com,
yes,
which is an indie food purveyor that is amazing. They do subscriptions for bourbon or gin or vodka or even just a general sort of cocktail kit
yes.
for people who might have preferences in those directions.
It's so good. I want to talk about the wedding gift that you gave me, which I lost my mind about. It was the sweetest thing. And Erica also, because she's good at these things, gave it to me or left it at my apartment the night before we left to travel to our wedding, which was an awesome experience. But Erica got me a beautiful quilt from Hopewell, which to be fair, she knew I wanted, but
I knew she wanted it
because
yeah.
I talked about it a lot.
I wasn't really going out on a limb with this,
but quilts are expensive. Handmade quilts are really expensive, but they're heirlooms and you will have them forever. And they're so stunning. So many of them these days are really beautiful.
There are a lot of cool new quilt mm-hmm. makers out there. I don't know when this became a thing. I guess we started noticing it a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Who was the one that won the Martha Stewart Made in America?
That was Hopewell.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
They are no yeah. longer producing, yeah. but there are a couple of other companies that make ones that we love. Louise Gray is the most mm-hmm. aesthetically similar to Hopewell. It's mm-hmm. very sort of geometric and striking. I have a quilt from Haptic Lab, which does a lot of quilts based on maps or like city mm-hmm. cityscapes, basically. So I have a whole Great Lakes region map.
Which is really sweet because you and your husband are both from the Midwest.
Exactly. And, yeah. and she does custom embroidery on hers. So, mm-hmm. you know, you could get the couple's initials on the mm-hmm. corner of it or something to make it feel really personal. And then one of the designers whose work we love and we feature on the site, mm-hmm. Ace and Jig.
And we've actually sold some of their quilts and they flew off the shelves. They do beautiful custom textiles in India and then they take their scraps left over from every season and make these stunning quilts. And the thing about these two is that, you know, you can put a quilt on a bed, you can have it on a couch, but they also make beautiful wall hangings.
And yes.
A quilt is such an amazing heirloom. I was really touched by that because I'll have it forever.
I also have seen them recently used more as rugs, which is interesting, like as floor throws.
Oh, God,
yeah.
I
would
never
so there's so many
online.
Options, but you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to say my favorite wedding gift, which to be fair, I registered for, so I'm really just patting myself on the back. But one of my favorite wedding gifts that I received was several hours with Tidy Tova. So Tidy Tova, who we need to have as a guest on the show, is a professional organizing expert. And she is the type of woman who will come in your home, spend a couple hours with you, and completely change the way you live. She's like the American Marie Kondo in my mind.
Yes.
She really...
But she's young and cool yeah. and not she's not pressury. She gets how you live your life and doesn't try to change you.
Exactly. No, she is like... She's like half Oprah in this way that she really totally... She has a relatable way with people.
Yes.
That and will adapt her advice to your life. And I just feel like she's a superstar. She has a professional organizing service, which I can't remember the hourly cost, but it's enough that like I would feel kind of guilty doing it. But to me, I was like, okay, my husband and I are starting our lives together, that I want our domestic space to be clean and lovely and calm. And so I registered for several hours with Tidy Tova and we got it. And she came in and she just helped make our space organized and have systems and labels. And I would highly recommend that as a gift to other people.
It probably saved you so many fights.
Oh my gosh, so many.
Yeah.
I mean, I've fallen off the course a little bit. I'm not going to say that, but, you know, I've kept up all the systems within a year. I could probably use another visit from Tidy Tova. But I also just love the symbolism of like, okay, we lived together before we got married, but now is really
we're
the start of
pressing a restart button.
Exactly. This is the start of our union. I want us to feel good about our space. And Tidy Tova helped with that a lot. I also recommend Tidy Tova to new moms or people who are making moves to like unpacking and packing. She's really helpful with.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go to commercial and then come back and talk to Ruthie.
Let's do it.
Book a farm escape. Escapemaker.com, a guide to local getaways, is offering a two-night farm escape that includes lodging, a visit to an apiary, wine tasting at a vineyard, and a special tour of Bobolink Dairy and Bakehouse in Milford, New Jersey. Transportation is included. For details, visit escapemaker.com or come by the Bobolink Dairy stand at the new open-air Fulton Stall Market on Front Street in the South Street Seaport District. Located where New York City's public food markets began in the 1800s, Fulton Stall Market is open weekends 10 to 5 and is the first farmers market in the city to offer ready-to-eat foods made by the farmers who produce them, along with a radio station, live music, and cooking workshops for families. now offering spring flowers and plants, organic vegetables, pizza made in a wood-burning oven using farm ingredients, local fruit preserves, yogurts, and ice cream, and Bubble Inc. Dairy's famous artisanal cheese and breads. The market is a great reason to rediscover the authentic Seaport. For more information, visit FultonStallMarket.com.
Welcome back to A Few Things with Claire and Erica. We are back with our very special guest, Miss Ruthie Barron. Erica, will you tell us who Miss Ruthie Barron is?
Yes, Ruthie is a part-time foot and hand model.
Exclusively for ofakind.com. We actually have the exclusive on her.
She's going to have to branch out because we can't pay enough, but currently.
The time being, fine.
She is a young adult fiction author of the book Defriended, and she is an editor at Oprah.com.
Hello.
And she is a super good friend of Ofakind.
She is. And by the way, we're not here to talk about Defriended, but I will say I could not put it down. It's a really good myth. It's like if the best R.L. Stein novel you've ever read, maybe. Is that how you would describe it, Ruthie?
I think that's really generous. And
I loved it. It's R.L. Stein for the Facebook
generation.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
For the Facebook generation. Okay, you wrote a YA book. What makes a book YA?
So that's a really hard question to answer.
And YA stands for young adult, we should probably say.
Yes.
Yeah.
We decided to start with a really hard one, Ruthie.
So So YA does stand for young adult. I think probably the biggest, it's easy to start with a mistake people make about YA, which is that it's a genre. And it's not. YA books you've heard of are probably Twilight, The Hunger Games, The Fault in Our Stars.
Yes.
And those are all obviously very different from each other. If you've read them, and if you haven't, like as long as you didn't live under a rock, you're probably aware that Twilight is a vampire romance and The Hunger Games is a dystopian game show. And The Fault in Our Stars is death and dying.
Cancer also.
Cancer.
Yeah. And crying.
And crying. And,
yeah,
and
all those things. Yeah.
And a marvelous book that you should read if you have not. So I think YA is books for teenagers, which can be in a lot of different genres. They can be mysteries. They can be, as we mentioned, vampire romances.
Yes.
But basically, it's books for teenagers, which also tends to mean books about teenagers and teenage concerns. But teenagers are not one person.
Right.
So.
Right. And even though they're meant for teenagers, teenagers aren't always the readers, as you and I prove time and time again.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I think there's teenagers know this, as do adults, that you can have like an emotional connection. If you love reading, you know that part of the joy of it is experiencing the world of somebody else.
Yes.
For however long you're reading, which means that you might enjoy books that are about people who don't have exactly your life or your demographic
background. And if it's a good book, it's a good book.
Right.
I think we should take a moment to out Erica, who, if you read 10 Things, you might have picked this up.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm being outed.
Erica's like a voracious young adult reader, YA book reader, kind of prides herself on being on the hot tip when it comes to the new YA novel. Like, here's what she was on Hunger Games way before it got optioned for a film, before anybody else was.
The new thing I'm into is The Selection, which is basically, I described it as The Bachelor meets The Hunger Games, but with ball gowns.
Oh my God, into it.
Yeah, and I'm reading it as part of a book club with my 12-year-old cousin that my 12-year-old cousin doesn't know she's participating in.
I hope she's not listening.
She's not. I can almost promise you.
I want to surprise her.
Yeah. But I do like, and I like things that are trashy and also kind of literary. And granted, The Selection and The Hunger Games all have sort of feminist motifs, and I don't feel terrible about reading them. And I think, you know, when I was growing up, my mom always was like, well, as long as you're reading, who cares? And I still kind of feel that way.
I think that's true. My mom got so upset about how much Babysitter's Club I read that she brought it up at the parent-teacher conference in fourth grade. And my fourth grade teacher was like, dude, your kid's reading. It's fine.
Who cares?
Yeah. I think one of the reasons that YA gets a bad rap, which, you know, we were discussing earlier, how every couple of years there's this sort of story about how grown-ups shouldn't read YA. It's immature and a sign of intellectual inferiority or whatever.
The Culture Police wrote a story on the Slate that straight up said, I think, I'm not quoting it word for word, but basically they said, adults should be embarrassed and ashamed for reading young adult novels.
And I think that there is this
bullshit.
It's totally inaccurate. And it's also the idea, like, I think the things that teenagers and especially teenage girls love mm-hmm. tend to get a really bad reputation. And that's so unfair because teenage girls often have terrific taste.
That is also true. Well, so this is speaking of about adults reading YA. I have a friend who is a teacher, a middle school teacher, and has taught at various private schools in New York and in Chicago and in Boston. And she had, I can't remember where, maybe it was in Boston, a sort of parent-student book club where they all read the same books. And this was meant as kind of a bonding activity. It was really smart. But she was pulled aside by multiple parents afterwards saying, this is the first book I've gotten through in years. And these are educated, you know, smart, savvy people, right? But this is the first book I've gotten through in years because YA books, they don't waste any time. They're not spending the first 100 pages like setting up the scene or this tone. They know that they might lose you. And so they write
There's
a
no
story.
Flowery prose for the sake of being like, that sentence is beautiful.
Of being literary.
Yeah.
But related to that, there have been a bunch of literary and really well-written YA books that have come out recently that have appealed to, I think, both adults and teenagers. Ruthie, I think you can speak to a bunch of that you've liked.
Some of my favorites recently, I think we've all, I'm not sure if we've all, but I think at least two of us have read Eleanor and Park.
Yes.
I have not. I know a lot about it, but I need to read it.
You really like it.
By Rainbow Rowell, and it's a really lovely, it's a romance, but also a coming-of-age story, and it's told sort of in alternate perspectives of these two characters, Eleanor and Park, who meet on a school bus in, I guess, mid or late 80s.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know it was a
and
period
And they both
piece.
Feel like, they both cast themselves as misfits mm-hmm. and feel not, you know, not part of like the cool crowd. And they feel like they had, you know, they don't blend in, they don't fit in, but in very different ways, but they find each other and bond.
They bond over comic books and a sort of mixtape that they trade back and forth in a really adorably romantic way that it's not, I mean, it's teenage love, but it's very relatable.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Well, I mean, all love is teenage love at some point.
That's
right.
Like,
facts only.
facts only. Everybody has teenage, an element of teenage in their love story.
What other books?
Another one I really, so I am addicted, there's a series I'm addicted to called The Raven Cycle. I think the first book is called The Raven Boys. It's by an author named Maggie Stiefvater. I might be saying that wrong. But it's about this girl named Blue Sargent who lives with her mother.
Great name.
It's a great name. And her mother is a psychic. They live in sort of like a coven of... It's her mother and her sisters and friends. And it's this kind of witch coven that they live in a town with a boarding school with these rich and not so rich cute boys who all have their own backstories.
Sign me up.
Yeah, you had me at witches and boarding school.
Yeah. Yeah, and like living with a bunch of women. I'm into it.
It's amazing. It has all these sort of fantasy and like Welsh history in it, but it's and magic, but it's also just a really fun teenage story. The characters are so outstanding.
What was the one about fighter pilots that you were telling us about?
Oh, yeah. Codename Verity. Codename Verity is a... I think it came out 2 years ago, maybe three. The author is Elizabeth Wayne. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Who I believe is a pilot, which I'm very jealous of because
That's really badass.
Sick job. Yeah.
Sick job. And, or hobby, at least.
Depends on whether she's paid for it or not.
And it's these sort of... like very young fighter pilot spies in World War II.
Oh, that is awesome.
And it is real. It's like a very clever mystery and also girl fighter pilots.
Girl fighter pilots. So we were talking about throwback young adult books mm-hmm. and Judy Blume has a new book coming out that's for adults, but that made us think about Summer Sisters, obviously.
So you brought that
up. It's adult?
I think that was her like
that
first
was her
adult
first adult
book, right?
Okay, which leads us into the next topic, I think, which is what makes something a young adult book and what makes an adult book, and what are the right. adult books about kids that
well, we because show. You were buying a bunch of books for Christmas for your 12-year-old cousin, and yes. you were looking for recommendations, and you and I both loved Where'd You Go, Bernadette, which
may so
such a great book, marketed towards adults for sure, but no reason it shouldn't be a young adult book.
It's very accessible, I think, for a 12-year-old. There's nothing in it that I wouldn't feel comfortable with her engaging with.
Well, and it's the protagonist is not a young adult, but the like the sort of second most prominent character featured is a young adult. And
exactly. And it has these really yeah. gripping mystery elements, and it gets exactly. right in there, I think, in a way that is appealing. We had talked about a few other books. The Age of Miracles is one that came to mind for me, which is one of those like dystopian I can't remember the full premise of it, but basically the Earth starts rotating the a Earth, little bit more slowly.
Yeah, it spins on a different time, and it throws everything off that it would throw off. Like, plants stop growing, and days are, you know, 22 days at a time is, like, the time that the sun is out.
Right.
And it has, Erica, you and I think have talked about this before, it has one of the most, I wish I had the quote with me, but it has this sort of
profound
sentence in it about how, like, the bad things that happen are never the bad things you expect. Totally. The ones that you can prepare for. And it feels very true to on a sort of like emotional level, but also on a global disaster level.
100%. Eric and I were talking about that recently when it comes to business. Like the yes. thing, you don't realize until a year later what the horrible thing you did to damage your business is.
Yes, like, totally. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So other books that fit this bill that I've read recently were Never Let Me Go, which why that's very much a YA book as far as I can tell. And True Grit, which is from that, which was written was in the late 60s.
Is that that was a movie too? Or
yes, okay. yeah.
Is it a Cormac McCarthy book? Or no, that's wrong.
I don't remember the author's name. I'm really bad at author's names. But it was originally a John Wayne movie in okay. the late 60s, right, and then it was remade
okay.
Recently, starring what is her name?
The young girl. Hallie Steinfeld.
Hallie Steinfeld. Yeah. Oh, yes,
you got the young it. Woman. We should that have young notes woman. For these things.
Yeah, and that True Grit felt like it was very much a YA book before its okay. time.
Ruthie, you and I were also talking about Adam, which is told from the perspective of like 17-year-old or something, and I don't think is marketed as a YA book.
No.
It actually, I wasn't sure. I saw it on some best of YA lists.
Oh, okay.
But I don't, I think maybe both.
I wonder if that changed the way that I read it, actually, because I didn't like it very much.
Yeah.
Ruthie was super into it.
It's so, do you want to explain the premise?
Okay. It's so I love the beginning of it. It's a 17-year-old high school kid moves to New York for the summer to live with his sister, who is a lesbian, who is a freshman at Columbia, and he falls in with her social crowd, and because she hangs out with lesbian, queer, transgender, he falls for a girl and ends up masquerading as a transgendered male.
Exactly.
If I'm using so basically he is born a man but masquerades as someone who was
born a woman
who has become a man
in order to woo this girl,
right? Because he believes
or to fit in exactly, with her crowd,
who believes that the girl wouldn't love him if
she knew he was just a dude.
Exactly. And the premise is actually really makes for a really good story. I just, the way the book went in the end, I didn't like. Although as is wonderful talking to your friends about books, Ruthie was like, well, it was satire. And I was like, oh, maybe I would have thought of it differently if I had considered it satire.
And I don't know that it was satire. Okay. I just read it that way.
Yeah.
I read it as a sort of loving satire of queer communities, and the hierarchies that emerge in them. And because there's sort of all this stuff, the sister is in this group of friends, and there's sort of all of these, like, who gets to have which opinions about which things,
right.
Which is, it's funny, and it's also, in the book I thought it was funny, and I also think it's never mean-spirited.
It really isn't. And I think that it's funny. I think if I had read it through the lens of satire, I really might have appreciated it more.
I like, though, that when we started talking about Adam, that we didn't know if it was marketed as YA or not. And yep. I think that those lines are blurring in a way that is probably really productive, because what is the point of distinguishing in that way.
Well, and it's like what you said is so, that story about the book club is so amazing. Like, what an awesome way to take kids at an age when they aren't really connecting with their parents over much and give them something to connect over. And so why not market a book as having an appeal to 12-year-olds and 40-year-olds?
Yeah, I think that's exactly. Awesome.
Well, yeah, that's what, I mean, whenever people, I feel like the ultimate compliment is like, it's YA, but adults will like it. And I guess that's probably true of pretty much every book that adults could give a chance to. Like, they might not all like it, but an adult is capable of liking anything.
Well, The Giver, right? Like, adults love The Giver. Absolutely. That's being turned into a movie, and I'm so excited because I don't even remember the plot anymore, but all I know is that I loved it, and I know that I would still love it if I read it again today.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It was turned into a movie.
I missed it. Oh, God.
It's okay.
You guys, I'm with it. I swear.
I would say...
Taylor Swift is in it, so I knew about it.
Exactly. I knew that, but I came out... See, this is the problem.
But it was a little bit of a blink and you miss it affair. And
unfortunately. You should read the book again
if you're
instead.
Interested, I would recommend rereading the book.
Okay. Yeah, that's good to know. On that note, go read The Giver. Thanks, Ruthie, for being with us today.
It was such a delight. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
You are awesome.
And you can listen to us every Wednesday at 1 p.m.
on Heritage Radio Network and sign up for our newsletter at ofakind.com.
Hey.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.